On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Cindy McGinty's husband, Mike, was on the 99th floor of the World Trade Center. Ava Rupp's sister, Diora, was on Flight 93. Kiri Lamack's mom, Judy, was on Flight 11, the first plane to hit the Twin Towers. Jimmy Dunn's entire company was on the 104th floor of Tower 2. September 11th was the wedding anniversary of Marion Fontana and her firefighter husband, Dave. He went straight into Ground Zero and never came out. Over the last 5 years, we've talked with all of these survivors about what they lost. Today, on the 5th anniversary, we'll ask what they and we have learned. Up next on Point, 9/11 survivors look back and look ahead. Jack Beatty's with us as well. And thanks very much for being with us, for listening along.
Hello, Tom. Pleasure to be here.
You know many of these people, and we're going to listen back with each. We'll listen back, in fact, to their thoughts closer, some much closer, to 9/11. And then we're going to hear conversations with them from just the last few days. I want to dive right in. Marion Fontana's husband, Dave, was a New York City firefighter. He was among the 343 firefighters who lost their lives on September 11th. Marion is president of the 9/11 Family Association. We first spoke with her in October 2001. At the time, Dave's body had not yet been recovered from the rubble. I asked her then what kind of memorial she would want to see eventually built at the site.
I'm still grieving, so I think part of the grieving process is it's very hard to look into the future at all, really. And I think we're all having trouble doing that, even just getting, you know, doing the day-to-day. I mean, it's interesting to hear. I know there's a lot of architecture firms submitting plans and who are sending them here to us so that we can see them, and I'm very touched that people, you know, from the beginning have all over the country have been reaching out and trying to, you know, honor the fallen in some really nice ways. So I am touched by that, but it is hard to even imagine anything being there.
Marion Fontana, in November 2001, just 8 weeks after the 9/11 attacks. Marion Fontana, thanks very much for being with us 5 years on.
Thanks. Thanks for having me again.
There's a lot we want to ask you, but what about the site itself? Dave, your husband was a firefighter. He was right in there. That site has had such tremendous importance to people. How's it been treated? How's it going in your view?
Well, it looks very sterile right now. It's a big empty hole. There's been some track restoration there. The path station has been restored. But basically, it's a big fence. It's very hard to see into it now to even get to understand the depth or the size and the magnitude of the event now. So, you know, it's hard to walk by there and see that, having seen it gone through, you know, so many stages from the recovery till now.
You and the 9/11 Families Association have organized to help people have some understanding of what's going on there. Describe that for us.
Well, you know, at about the four-year mark, we kind of looked at our association and tried to decide where we'd be useful and if shutting our doors was appropriate at that time, because we really had no more issues to face. And so from that, we decided to give tours by the 9/11 community, and we started to offer them off, you know, we didn't have a space yet. We just were offering them on the site, around the site, in the Amex building, just pointing places out and people telling their very personal stories. So we have now 122 trained docents who are survivors, retired firefighters, residents, business owners, volunteers who came to the site from other places. And it's really amazing to see how their stories really affect the visitors there.
How about the country? What do you think about the path we've walked since 9/11?
Well, it's a little disheartening. I kind of felt after 9/11, the outpouring of humanity and love and kindness that was just so poignant at that time. It was remarkable to walk through the streets of New York and see people hugging and lighting candles, and the whole world was reaching out to us, and we were receiving letters from all over the world, and so touched that people would care about us in this big way. And I felt like the whole world was at America's beck and call, and I really feel like we squandered that opportunity to work globally on how to defeat terrorism and change the way we think about things. So I'm a little disappointed. I'm very disappointed in the direction we've gone.
What would you like the rest of us to be thinking about on 9/11?
Well, I think, you know, the positive thing to come out of it was exactly what I was saying, that kind of appreciating people in a way that you didn't before, not taking things for granted the way we did before. And I think that's what the lessons are learned from 9/11. And I try to do that by, you know, loving Aiden and treating people the way I would want to be treated and not taking my life for granted at all. And so that's what 9/11 reminds me to do.
Marion, we wish the best to you and to Aiden, all our best.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Marion Fontana's husband, Dave, was a firefighter with the Elite Squad 1 in Brooklyn. He died at the World Trade Center. The paperback edition of her memoir, A Widow's Walk, comes out today. Carrie Lamont's mother, Barbara, was on American Airlines Flight 11, the first plane to hit the World Trade Center on 9/11. In the days after the terrorist strike, Carrie launched Families of September 11th, the largest organization of survivors of the 9/11 dead. She served on the Family Steering Committee of the 9/11 Commission. We first spoke with Carrie on the second anniversary of 9/11. I asked her then what she needed from those of us not directly affected by the terrorist attacks.
I think that people have to have some courage, and the courage to ask questions, because there are a lot of questions that have yet to be answered. We've been put in a position where it has been the victims who have been having to ask those questions, and I think that there has been some more room for support from people outside of the victims' community to help us and to get some answers.
Carrie Lamont, September 11th, 2003. Carrie, thanks for joining us again in 2006.
Thank you for having me.
So, that was 2003. Now it's fifth anniversary, 2006. Have we found the courage? Are Americans asking the right questions?
Well, I actually think now what we need courage to do is to take action. One thing that struck me this year was that we had a lot of movies come out about 9/11. Mm-hmm. And we asked, well, if you're going to have people sit in a movie theater for 2 hours and experience 9/11 as Hollywood sees it, why shouldn't we have those same people take action to make sure that what happened on 9/11 never happens again?
What's the action you want to see?
There are a lot of things people could do. We could talk about, for example, nuclear terrorism. Osama bin Laden said in 1993 he wanted to take down the Twin Towers. It took him 8 years, but he did it. Now he says he wants to kill 4 million Americans with a nuclear bomb. And in 2004, both President Bush and Senator Kerry agreed it was the gravest threat facing the nation. But what have we done about it? What legislator, what elected official is talking about stopping nuclear terrorism and locking down nuclear weapons? I haven't heard very many. And I think that it takes the courage of the American public to say, wait a second, I want my leaders to make sure I'm safe. We have a madman out there who says he wants to use a nuclear bomb. Are we safe? Are we locking them down?
What grade do you give the U.S. government since the original 9/11/01 on its response to that day, to the events of that day?
Well, I would look at what the 9/11 commissioners' grades were. And last December, they came out with a report card. There were 17 Ds and Fs.
This is on national security measures that ought to be taken.
Exactly, on the 9/11 commission recommendations that came out in 2004. So we have a lot of work to do. I know my mom would not have been happy if I came home with a report card with 17 Ds and Fs.
That's on defense at home. What about in terms of outreach to the world?
Oh, that's both, actually. That's public diplomacy. That's reaching out to other countries. That's doing everything from making sure we have walkie-talkies that can communicate so first responders can talk, to reaching out to the Saudis and the Iraqis and making sure people understand the U.S.
How do you assess that part of it, Carrie? You've paid a lot of attention to these things since then. How do you assess U.S. outreach to the rest of the world, our face to the globe?
Well, I think you can't look at a newspaper or watch TV today and see that we have some work to do there. People don't seem to be rallying behind the United States like they did 5 years ago.
You've been very busy since 9/11/01. You've got two big degrees here and started a company of your own. Do you remember how your own dreams have changed since before and after? I mean, have your ambitions changed? Were they changed by your mother's death, by the events of that day?
I think everything has changed for me since 9/11. Everything in my life is different, and I look at life from a very different perspective. I think that my passions before 9/11 have changed, clearly, and I really want to make sure that what happened to my mom never happens to anyone again.
You've worked a lot with 9/11 families, the families of September 11th. Do you have a sense still? Are you still in touch with this whole gang? Do you have a sense of the kind of health of the body, the politics, the coloring that group has taken on? Is it even a group, or is it just as diverse as the rest of the country?
Well, Families of September 11 is a nonprofit I co-founded, and yes, I'm very much in touch with it. I'm a board member, and I'm actively working on its behalf. In terms of the 9/11 families as a cohort, We are very unique and very different and diverse, but there are some things we all agree on, and that is that what happened on 9/11 should never happen again. And I have not met anyone who does not feel passionately about that. We do have a community. We do stay in touch, and I've made some fantastic friendships through it. And as one widow says to me, it's the best group of people I never wanted to meet.
What about the politics since 9/11, the way 9/11 has been used, has motivated, has directed America's conversation with itself? How do you judge it?
Well, I always say that safety is not a partisan issue and that Republicans and Democrats were murdered alike on 9/11. And in order to make the country safer, we have to look at it from a nonpartisan point of view. Because the minute we allow politics to play how we're going to handle security, safety, and preparedness, we're not going to be able to stop the people who are out there to get us.
Has that happened, that nonpartisan consideration?
In some cases, yes, but in a lot of cases, no. And for that reason, we still have a lot more work to do.
How do you think back on your mom now, Judy? She died 5 years ago this year, this anniversary. How do you think back on her?
Well, I think about her every day. I think that for me, 9/11 is not the only day I think about 9/11. I think about it every minute and every day. And my mom is always in my heart. We spoke every day on the phone, if not more than one time a day. So for me, 9/11 is a very personal event. It's not a national event. It's the day my mom was murdered. And I think about my mom constantly. And I know that I'm going to live a life that she'd be proud of. And that's my goal.
Carrie Lamack, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Carrie Lamack's mother, Judy, was on board American Airlines Flight 11, the first plane that was crashed into the World Trade Center 5 years ago today. Jack, we've got more to hear from the people who lost husbands, wives, mothers, sisters on that day. Their immediacy is something I think that deserves, the immediacy of their loss deserves memory today, even as we think as a nation what we've lost and perhaps gained.
Yes, and they look ahead. You know, you've been asking them what do they see ahead for themselves and for the country, and you sense that there's been a public aspect to this. People have acted, and in a way, that's a model for all of us, isn't it? I mean, there's this tragedy, there was this terrible attack, and then the government said, we'll act for you. Well, these people are saying, no, you've got to act, too, as a citizen.
Yeah, I'm hearing that very much in really all the conversations today. The next one that we'll hear from, Jimmy Dunn, whose company was directly hit by this. Of course, he famously became very involved in helping educate the children of those kids who lost parents on that day. No question, there's a direct move to action here, and interesting thoughts about what happened and where we're headed as well. Jack, if I may, let's go back into these. These are survivors of 9/11 that we've talked with over the years. We're listening back to tape of them from our first conversation and then conversations that I've had with him in just the last few days. I want to turn to Jimmy Dunn. His investment banking firm, Sandler O'Neill, was on the 104th floor of Tower 2 at the World Trade Center. 66 of his employees died on September 11th, 2001. Dunn has dedicated his life to rebuilding his firm and helping the families of those lost on September 11th. We spoke with him first on the first anniversary of 9/11. I asked him then about his take charge attitude.
I think in life sometimes it's good not to have an option because you have no... There's no question, there's no doubt, there's no issue. And I've never been more clear as to what I thought I needed to do than I was on the morning of September 11th.
Jimmy Dunn, September 11th, 2002, on the first anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. Jimmy Dunn, thanks for joining us again in 2006. Do you still have that clarity of purpose today?
I am still as clear as to what we should do. Obviously, on September 11th, it was much more of a catastrophe. Life has turned much more normal than it was, and you have more options. On that day, you just drove as hard as you could, did as much good as you could do, try to survive. Now we will survive, and now life, as it should, creates other options. But I still have the same convictions and same attitudes, and I don't feel any differently about anything that I felt that morning. And I think most of us all feel the same way.
Jimmy Dunn, you were an inspiration to a lot of people in those days. It's 5 years now. I wonder what you've personally learned since 9/11 about life, about the world.
Well, I'm somewhat proud to say, and I think it might have to do with my parents, my family, my education, that my priorities are not any different today than they were on that day. those terrorists taught me nothing about what was important in life, how sacred life is. Now, I will concede that the intensity of my priorities has got to be greater. I knew that when I put my kids to bed and I hugged them before they went to sleep, how precious that was and how important their health was and how lucky we were. Mm. Now when I hug them and Chris Quackenbush can't hug his kids and Jimmy Connor can't hug his kids and Bruce can't hug his kids, I hug them a little harder. But the total, so the intensity may be more, but my priorities are very much the same. The things that were important to me before are important now, and I think that's true for our country. We just know it a little better now. We remember it a little better.
You're a gung-ho guy. We can hear that in your voice. We see that in what you did after 9/11, looking out for the children of those who died in your company. But have you become attuned to the part of life that's not so gung-ho? There's a lot of suffering and sorrow out of 9/11. Are you more attuned to that?
Well, I'm absolutely attuned and sensitive. That's incredible. Away from 9/11, just how many other tragic things happened to people's lives. Friends of, people that I knew, that lost a loved one or that lost a child before I knew them or things like that. Nobody gets through this life without some seriously sad thing occurring. And it's how you deal with those things go a lot to your character and how you choose to live. I believe more in ceremony now than I did. I hated to go to weddings and funerals and all that stuff prior to 9/11. Now if I take that stuff more serious, I'm more sensitive to ceremony. I'm more sensitive to writing notes, to expressing how people, to try to be more empathetic towards people, because their empathy towards us was enormously valuable. So I appreciate it more. Yeah, I would say maybe I'm more in touch with my feminine side, if that's how you want to say it. Maybe to some degree, yeah. Yeah, I would say that's true.
How's the company doing? Sandler O'Neill, you lost 66 people on that day. How's it look now?
Solid. We've hired great people. We've honored very much our partners that we lost that day. Our business is solid. It's always difficult. It was difficult before. It's difficult today. It'll
it's business.
Be difficult tomorrow, but it's business.
Where are you located now?
919 3rd Avenue. We're right next to P.J. Clark's on 3rd and 55th, and we're on the 6th floor, and we're doing fine here.
6th floor. I saw a poll last week. It said 2/3 of New Yorkers, this was a New York Times poll, are still very concerned about another attack on the city. That's much higher than the rest of the country. 1/3 of New Yorkers saying they think about 9/11 every day. 1/3 saying they haven't gone back to their old routines. 6 in 10 saying they would not be willing to work on a high floor in a new building at the World Trade Center site. How do you think New York's doing, Jimmy Dunn?
I think New York is doing great. I am, I would be one of the 4 in 10. I would go back to the World Trade Center. I would go back to a higher floor. But I think there'd be a lot of people in our firm that wouldn't follow, so we're not going to do that for us specifically. But I have no problem with that. I think people are certainly more conscious of it. I think that we were a little isolated to terrorism throughout the world and didn't quite realize how it was. I think that, whether you look at Madrid or Bali and London, I mean, we're a citizen of the world. We're going to be involved with this. New York is a logical place for them to come back and do. But I think New York has responded as only New York could. I think it responded terrifically.
We've asked about you and the city. What about the country, the United States? How do you think it's doing 5 years on? What have we learned? Have we learned the right things? Are we acting on them?
I think that the world is both. I think we're much more safe and much more conscious of the terrorism that's out there. With that being said, I think there are probably more nuts, more maniacs now than there were, and I think that we can't coexist with these people. There is no compromise. They want to destroy us. There are many more of us in the world than them. We have to destroy them. Okay, it is sad. Violence usually does not lead to anything that's at all fruitful. But there's no compromise to these people. I mean, they want to destroy our way of life. We have to eliminate them, and that's going to be a burden with living in a free society that we're going to have to endure.
Jimmy Dunn, thanks for joining us again.
My pleasure, and enjoy your show, and best of luck to you.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye now.
Jimmy Dunn is Senior Managing Principal at Sandler O'Neill & Partners. The firm lost 66 employees on September 11th, 2001. Jack Beatty, you were with Jimmy Dunn. A year later, here he is. It's a very similar attitude. Help the fallen, get back to business, and no compromise, he says.
No compromise, but as I remember, back to 2002, he was pretty shaky still. He wanted to know in advance the questions we'd be asking. He wanted to know who else was going to be on the air. He didn't want to be surprised by something that would plunge him back into the, as he said, seriously sad thing that had happened. And in the course of the conversation, of course, he did get plunged back into it, and I remember him becoming, he cried a couple of times as he remembered what happened. But he was a brave man, not wanting to fall back, not wanting to be surprised by what he knew was lurking there.
And not wanting to be surprised again today, but still you can hear between the lines there, and not even an awareness. It's still New York. It's still a potential target. Jimmy Dunn very aware of that and saying, I don't like violence. It may not lead to anything good, but we can't live with this.
We can't live with this, and he says we have to destroy them. And, of course, that's the question. Who are them? Who are they? Just recently we learned that Pakistan now is becoming an enclave for Al-Qaeda. Not Afghanistan, now Pakistan.
And has drawn up a truce, effectively.
Drawn up a truce, effectively, with Al-Qaeda. So, they, at least in that respect, are still alive and well. And to me, the great question about this is why that man is still alive. Why we have not, in fact, sent every last soldier after him to destroy his power and his organization right there. Instead, the government of Pakistan seems to be protecting it today.
That man, Osama bin Laden. I want to turn now to Ava Rupp, Jack. Ava Rupp's stepsister, Dira Bodley, was on United Flight 93. It crashed, of course, into the field near Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. In January 2001, Ava, her stepfather, Daryl Bodley, and other 9/11 survivors went on a peace mission to Afghanistan. We spoke with Ava in January 2002, right after she got back. I asked her then why she had made the trip.
I reflected a lot on peace and a lot on the way Diora lived her life. She was a very peaceful person, mm-hmm. and tried to understand people, tried to help children, and both in honoring that memory and also in trying to promote understanding between people, because I felt like this was such a hateful act. You can only really heal hateful acts with acts of love and acts of understanding.
Ava Rupp, in January 2002, just after the U.S. toppling of the Taliban, Ava Rupp joins us again. Ava, thanks for being with us in 2006. Do you still feel that way, that hateful acts such as this can only be healed with acts of love and understanding?
I do, and unfortunately where we are in 2006, there have been a lot more hateful acts committed since the last time I joined you, so I think we have a whole lot more work to do ahead of us to get to the point where the world is more peaceful.
You were kind of a peace activist then. You reached out to go to Afghanistan. You were not so sure that invasion was a great thing at that time, when it was fairly popular. Are you still a peace activist now? Do you have a more complicated view? How's it look?
Just to go back to right after September 11th, I hadn't really been very active until after September 11th. And my stepfather, who I went to Afghanistan with, had never been a peace activist. In fact, he was a Vietnam vet. The first time I talked to him after September 11th, he said, that the only solution to this is peace and to work for peace. And that just really resonated with me as the only right way to react to this. And, I definitely was against the Taliban being in Afghanistan. The thing that I had the most objection to is the fact that there are always civilian casualties in wars like this. It's almost inevitable. And since we had a relative who had become a civilian casualty of an act of hate or an act of war, I felt their pain.
Your stepsister, Diora, on Flight 93.
Yeah.
How does Diora live in your mind now? Are anniversaries important to you? Is it more constant than that?
As I think my stepfather also died last year in September on the 21st.
This was a motorcycle accident last year.
That's
so
right.
It's not only great terrorist attacks that lead to surprising death.
Yeah, and it was his 60th birthday, and I had just spoken with him, and he was planning on coming to Washington, D.C. to participate in a rally to pull our troops out of Iraq, because that was really important to him.
And this was Diora's father.
It was, mm-hmm. And I think that it's important for us now every September to remember both of them, just carry out acts of kindness and acts of peace to remember them and help their spirits live on.
And Flight 93 that Diora was on, your stepsister, the flight she died on, it is often raised as a symbol now of American heroism, resistance, fighting for freedom in the scuffle that apparently went on that plane. How do you feel about that?
I do think it's accurate that all of the passengers in some capacity, rose up to fight against the terrorists. And, you know, that's comforting to me, actually, to know that they felt empowered to try to take the matter into their own hands. And I believe that they were trying as hard as they could to come home safely against this very imminent threat that they were aware of. So I think I'm glad that it's come to light more in the past years that is was a unanimous thing that everybody did.
And American freedoms now?
You know, there have been a lot of people who have raised a lot of concerns about freedoms now, about the state of the United States and civil liberties now. And I think it's a very big challenge to come to a balance trying to protect us from people who do want to harm us, because that is definitely still a real threat, and also to make sure people here aren't unjustly accused, to make sure people aren't held without charges, to make sure that this country is still a free place while protecting us.
Ava, you've got a story of life and hope and really glory as well. You've got a new son since 9/11. Theodore, tell us about him. How old is he?
I do. He is a year and a half, and he is just great. You know, children are our future, and he's a very loving kid. And, we hope to share the memories of Diora with him and with my stepfather, and teach him to try to live his life the right way with peaceful intentions.
Our very best to your son, Theodore, and to you, Ava Rupp. Thanks for being with us again.
All right. Thank you very much.
Ava Rupp's stepsister, Diora Bodley, was on United Flight 93, which crashed in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. She spoke with us from Washington. Jack Beatty, there, that impulse to acts of peace, acts of war, standing up for freedom, vigilance against another attack. There's the same sort of braided impulses that we see right across the country.
Yes, and she draws attention to our domestic estate. And here I think we need to take credit for something, and the Bush administration should take credit for something. The president said after 9/11, the face of Islam is not the face of terror. And, you know, when you compare what happened to minorities in this country connected to foreign nationals and war during our other wars and today, we have a good record. It hasn't been perfect. There's been persecution. There have been killings of Muslim Americans and people, you know, are suspected of being from the Middle East. But nothing like World War I, where the government actually, you know, fed a whole propaganda machine of persecution of Germans and German. And, of course, we know about World War II. So this is an achievement that there hasn't been this sort of American jihad.
I want to turn now to Cindy McGinty. We've been listening back to tape of earlier conversations and then conversations I've had in just the last few days with these survivors. Cindy McGinty's husband, Mike, died in the World Trade Center attack. He worked for Marsh and McLennan. He was on the 99th floor of the North Tower when the first plane struck the World Trade Center. Cindy's now raising their two sons in Foxborough, Massachusetts. We first spoke with her on the first anniversary of September 11th. I asked her then about the absence in her household now that Mike was gone.
I'm not sad for me. Mike and I found each other, and I think he always wanted to be a dad, and I always wanted to be a mom. And the fact that we found each other and had such a good marriage was the miracle of my life. My heart is broken for his children, because they will never know the man that he was. They will never know their dad, and they will not become the men that their dad made them or helped to make them. So my heart breaks for them.
Cindy McGinty, on the first anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. Cindy McGinty, thanks so much for joining us again.
Thank you for having me.
Does the heartbreak ever go away? Does it change?
It changes. Doesn't ever go away. I've had many people comment to me about how is it coming up to the 5th anniversary on September 11th, and what people forget is that we still wake up on the 12th without our loved ones. Mm-hmm. And I think Mike is still the last person I think about at the end of the day and the first person I think about at the beginning of the day. That being said, we're in a different place 5 years later. I've been able to find joy again in life.
I just learned we heard from your son the other day. Daniel called in.
Yes.
He was so clear on the air, asking the older kids who had lost someone on 9/11 how they understood it then, how they understand it now. Something's going very right there. Talk to us about marriage and this loss. You know, 9/11 is an anniversary. It's formal. We all pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an everyday thing for you.
It is. You know, I miss Mike on Wednesday night when I'm putting the trash out by myself, when the kids come home and they have a problem at school that I can't resolve, when I need to be at a wrestling match and a Boy Scout meeting.
When you're laughing at a movie.
Yeah. And you know what struck me?
Thinking he might have laughed at this.
Yeah, when we're picking out movies or when David plays a song that I know Mike and he would have listened to together. And for me, you know, that sadness never goes away, but I incorporated it, I think, into my life, and I feel like we're living again.
Talk to us with us about another relationship, your relationship, if it's not too personal, with faith, religious faith with God. When, as I recall the story, Cindy, when you got the news of the terrorist attack, you were at church.
I was volunteering at church. Mike and I were very involved at Bethany Church. It was our first home, even before our home on Lauren Lane. I mean, we spent a lot of time there and wanted that for our children. After 9/11, I think I distanced myself a little bit because I had always experienced faith as joy. And after 9/11, I experienced faith as this void because Mike was so present in that part of my life and now he was gone. But I think that after 5 years, I realized that I think I was just getting quiet and listening to God. And I'm ready to be more involved and to be more visible. But I think my faith has been strengthened by this because I'm here 5 years later.
Has it changed your faith? Do you think God has had a plan for all of us, including you, including Mike?
You know, I struggle with that all the time because if this is his plan for me, I'm really ticked off. I want to get back in line and get another plan.
Yes.
But I do know that God took care of us. We live in Foxborough. We go to Bethany, and he knew we would need that. He knew I would need that to help with my children. So it strengthened my faith in one way and challenged it in many ways.
You came out of this, out of 9/11, a widow, that big word, you know. Ann Coulter, not so long ago, this is the commentator, went after women who were made widows on 9/11. She called them self-obsessed millionaires, I guess because of the compensation after, reveling in their status as celebrities. What do you think of that?
Well, you know, I have two comments for Ann Coulter. One is she should be nicer to her fellow man. The second point is that, you know, we're not all millionaire widows. She has no clue what we got for settlements. I can assure you that I live the same lifestyle I lived before, except that we don't live paycheck to paycheck anymore. You know, Mike had life insurance. Yep, I'm not going to deny that. But what it's allowed me to do is focus on my children. And the other thing that Ann Coulter said in some of the interviews was that the whole country suffered on 9/11 and basically we should get over ourselves. Well, you know what? My husband doesn't come home at night. I think, yes, the whole country suffered with this, but I experienced it a little bit differently and so did those widows. And who is she to comment on how somebody processes their grief?
You've spoken about a kind of yin and yang of your own 9/11 experience. That's a subtle view. Take us into it.
Well, I'm a very different person than I was before 9/11. In many, many ways, I have learned more about myself and what I'm capable of that I never would have learned if Mike was here and we were still happily married and oblivious and living in Foxborough.
More traditional marital roles and relationships.
I think if he came back today, we would struggle a little bit because I wouldn't be the great woman behind her man. I'd want a more equal side-by-side relationship.
You've had to step up.
I've had to, you know, and some of it was kicking and screaming. And the other thing is I'm now part of this 9/11 group of people who I never wanted to know, yet I am so blessed and so grateful for having in my life.
What do you want your children to know out of this experience?
Well, I want my children to know a few things. One is that I want them to look back and say, boy, I can't believe Mom did that, not, gee, Mom fell apart. Number two, I want them to be able to separate the terrorists from the rest of society and know that to counter terrorism, you have to help people, that you have to help people, and everybody has the right to a job, health insurance, health care, and a roof over their heads. And I want them to learn to contribute to society, to make that better and make that dream come true so that someday we can live in a peaceful world.
That is a big, embracing view. It makes me hopeful. Cindy McGinty, thank you very much for being with us again.
Thank you.
Cindy McGinty's husband, Mike, died in the Twin Towers. He was 42 years old. Cindy is raising their two sons in Foxborough, Massachusetts. Jack Beatty, there's another view. If you want to stop terrorism, you have to help people. Again, these twin impulses coming out in these conversations.
Yeah, she wants to extend some of the healing that she's experienced in her own life and that she probably had to do a lot of on her own. She wants to generalize that. She sees that people are hurt and that one of the causes of terrorism is a sense of historical hurt and humiliation that people feel in the Middle East, and also just the anger that they feel for our support of the regimes, as they call it. You know, for so long we have supported these authoritarian governments, and for so long they have been miserable to their people. And on 9/11, some of their people struck at us because of our connection with them.
Jack, what about your own emotions on this, and thoughts on this anniversary? You were in New York at Ground Zero on the first anniversary. Now it's 5 years. It's a long time, longer than all of World War II. How are you responding?
Well, I keep going back to the day my wife and I were down there, and we went to the World Trade Center where there was a ceremony. The names were being read as today. And there were a whole group of people standing by the outside of the pit, as it was called then, and firemen were filing out, and people were applauding. And we had been talking with someone in the crowd for some time, a construction worker who had gone down to the site that on 9/11, stayed there for, I don't know, 2 weeks, and worked there. And he had a photographic album of, you know, dogs looking exhausted, of his destroyed boots, of his ripped gloves. And, of course, he didn't find anybody. And in the middle of this, standing next to him was a woman with a paper bag. And in the bag, she had rose petals. And she was throwing the rose petals at the firemen as they were going by. And suddenly she went into a sobbing, paroxysm of sobbing, couldn't control herself. And this man, who had rushed to the site to save people, pulled metal out of the way, reached over with his strong hand and held her hand and held it fast for, I swear, 2 minutes until she subsided, not even looking at her, didn't know her. And I thought, my God, here's a man who stopped whatever he was doing to rush to save people at the World Trade Center and who a year later was reaching out to comfort a woman. And he's an inspiration to me. And I think that story could be multiplied so many times on that day in New York.
Hand in hand, arm in arm.
Yes.
Then, now we're at the fifth anniversary. Jack, I want to bring one more voice in this hour. In December 2001, we spoke with photographer Joel Meyerowitz, who was then capturing the massive recovery effort at Ground Zero in Manhattan, the exhausted police officers, firefighters, construction workers, engineers, the volunteers, and that tangled waste of dust and steel that was once the World Trade Center. Meyerowitz was the only photographer granted official, unimpeded access to the site. A massive collection of his photos is now out in a new book called Aftermath. Joel Meyerowitz joins us from New York. Joel, thanks very much for being with us again.
Hello, Tom. Good to be with you.
I should say to our listeners, you can see a gallery of Joel Meyerowitz's photographs from the book Aftermath at our website, onpointradio.org. Joel, these anniversaries come and go and come and go again, and now it's five. Do you still go back? Do you still look into that pit?
Well, I can't go into it the way I did earlier, but certainly I visit down there. I'm drawn to it for some crazy reason. You know, you just keep wanting to see if change is happening, how people are relating to it. And you know, one of the things I keep seeing is how visitors come to that site and they look up into the void where the buildings were. And people point as if they could pick out a spot in the heavens where the buildings were. And it's so touching to see that gesture, that almost futile gesture to define and describe something that doesn't exist any longer.
But in time, that memory will recede, certainly among children who were too young to know. Is that part of the point of photographs and looking back? I mean, could this be in some visceral degree forgotten?
Yes, it will be forgotten. I mean, that's part of what nature and time does. It moves things further away so we actually gain perspective, and things diminish in scale and importance to generations that come. And one of the reasons I tried to make this book, I mean, was my own need to be helpful. I see that help is a very strong theme today on the show, mm-hmm. and I felt that way too. I felt helpless and powerless, and I wanted to do something. And I was too late to go in and move steel, and I'm not even strong enough to do that. But when I heard that there were no photographs allowed, I had that light bulb clarification for a second, and I thought, that's what I could do. I could find a way to make the photographic record so that at least the efforts, the helpful efforts of all of those people who volunteered, just like that man that was described a minute ago, the worker who was in there for weeks, their devotion, their time in the site needed to be accounted for in some way. History should be able to show that these efforts were invented on the spot, methods to remove this debris, the spirituality of the site that was embedded in the working of the people who gathered there. All of these systems and emotions were actually lived through for 9 months. And if it had no record, it would be a huge loss for us.
You know, Joel, Jack, I want to ask each of you, here we are on the fifth anniversary, the president and many others there in New York at Ground Zero today. I wonder how, Joel, you first look at this, the issue, you know, how much should we be looking back down into that pit, into this history, and how much lifting our eyes to the world beyond? What's the right balance, Joel?
Well, I'm going to speak from the point of view of the work I did in my book. Since the site had been closed to everyone, people couldn't even go nearby to grieve.
Yeah.
They couldn't look in. And so I think now this book offers an opportunity to take a long look in and see what it really was like. And then from that perspective, we can move on. Because why should we be stuck in the past? I mean, the past accompanies us as we live our lives, but it doesn't play, you know, the function that hope and the future does. And so I think we need to look forward. And I'm glad that building has begun in Ground Zero. Many people complain that, why has it taken 5 years? And you know, something this meaningful shouldn't be rushed. It needed to be brought into being through the loving hands and minds of many people.
Jack, let me put the same question to you. I mean, there was tragic, massive loss on that day. There was real heroism in the aftermath that Joel Meyerowitz captures on film. And yet, there's a whole world to look at to address the problem behind that. How do you feel about the balance we've struck as a country of looking back and looking out and beyond ahead?
I'm afraid I think it's been exploited politically, the memory of this. And I find myself fighting going back to think about it just because it's become such a part of campaigning in America and of appealing to not really to the best of that scene, which is the volunteerism, which is the heroism, which is the self-sacrifice, which is the fireman going up the stairs. Mm. That's the spirit. Instead, it's fear, fear, fear. Fear of the enemy everywhere. And, you know, there's a piece in Foreign Affairs magazine now by the political scientist John Mueller that makes a very good case that we have much less to fear than our government says. That 4,000 illegal entries into the country a day, what with 300 million legal entries each year, where are the terrorists? Where are the sleeper cells? They don't appear to be here. And which isn't to say they won't come here or can't come here, but that we're doing pretty well on that front, and we have less to fear on that front than we do, it seems to me, from precisely fear itself.
Remember the heroism. Don't be blinded by the fear. Joel Meyerowitz, you help us remember that heroism very well with your tremendous collection of photographs. Aftermath is the new volume. Joel, thank you very much for being with us this hour.
Thanks, Tom.
Photographer Joel Meyerowitz joined us from New York. You can see a gallery of his photos at our website, onpointradio.org. Jack Beatty, thank you so much for being with us this hour on the fifth anniversary of 9/11. Jack, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.